Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast series for the second of two episodes focused on the excellent work at Brighton Grammar School in Melbourne, Australia. In the previous episode, I had the privilege of talking to Dr. Mark Dowling, the Associate Head of Staff Development and Instruction, and in this episode, I'm so pleased to be joined by Raylene Plaza, the Director of Instructional Coaching. Raylene balances a diverse coaching schedule, supporting a team of motivated coaches, as well as teaching a Year 7 English class. Raylene's expertise in literacy and her natural curiosity about how to maximise literacy outcome for boys often gives her coaching a literacy focus. As an accredited instructional coach, Raylene has recently relinquished her position as head of literacy to focus fully on maintaining a thriving coaching culture at Brighton Grammar School. With a diverse background in teaching, she considers instructional coaching to be the highest impact role of her career in education. She embraces the opportunity to share her experiences in developing a coaching culture with others, which is why it is such a pleasure, Raylene, to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me, Richard.
Raylene, can you share with us something of your journey into education and how you arrived at your current role at Brighton Grammar?
I certainly can. It's a long journey. So I initially trained as a primary teacher, and over a period of 25 years, I had a range of teaching experiences. So I taught from prep right through to year nine. And in amongst those years, I also held a number of leadership positions. And in 2016, I had been working at Brighton Grammar School for 8 years. I applied for a role as a literacy coach. So that was the start of the Brighton Grammar coaching journey. I was the very first coach to be employed. And at the same time, the school embarked on some growth coaching training, so whole school training. So that was really the beginning of my coaching journey as a literacy coach. And that evolved into being an instructional coach. And I've been helping Mark to support the coaching program up until this year, where I stepped into the role of the Director of Instructional Coaching.
It's amazing, Raylene, to hold that position as the pioneer at Brighton Grammar for the first official coach in there. So well done you for that one. Raylene, you've been, as you say, at Brighton Grammar for quite a period of time and have experienced school life prior to there being an established and thriving coaching culture. In your bio, you state that instructional coaching has been the highest impact role of your career, which is quite a statement. Can you share with us why you feel it has had such an impact?
Certainly, I might address the reason why I say that's the most amazing impact I've had. And that is because, you know, when you're working in a classroom, you have positive impact, hopefully, on the students in your class. But when you're working with teachers, helping them to improve their practice, it's greatly amplified and enormously pleasurable. So it's kind of like improving practice without all of the, you know, teacher complaints and, you know, reluctant students. You've got very, very happy students. So you have a greater impact, a faster impact, and a very positive impact and a very broad impact. But if I was to talk about what life was like at Brighton Grammar before we started, we embarked on our coaching program, it's probably very similar to what other schools were doing. We were a high-performing school. We brought in guest speakers to educate our staff. We spent a lot of time and money sending our teachers out on training courses. And we had a good caliber of teachers, and our students were, you know, fairly successful. It's not really until I look back that I noted that I can see the actual tangible changes that have happened. Certainly the most obvious one is a positive shift in the way teachers communicate with each other. our academic gains are very obvious, and I'm not going to claim that instructional coaching is the only reason that that's happened, but certainly that, that's really positive feedback for us. Our staff satisfaction surveys, though, are really what hit me, what strike me as being indicative of the change. So I guess there was a level of, a slight level of cynicism about professional development before we started going down the coaching path. So, it was a one size fits all type plan. And staff, often felt that they were just going through the motions, that they were forced to do the PL. It wasn't really relevant to them, perhaps. Now it's very much a personal approach to professional development, where staff have their own goals, something that's really important to them in their classroom, and they work one on one with a coach. So that, that has really changed the way they think about professional development. In fact, if I can tell a little story, we had a very unique opportunity to be all together last year in amongst our lockdowns, and we did an exercise on a staff day where we had our staff in very random groups, just, talking about life at Brighton Grammar. And one of the questions was, what's the greatest thing about teaching here? Or what do we do well? Why does Brighton Grammar stand out from the pack? And, the most common point of discussion was the staff professional development. So the staff are looked after, their professional development is prioritised. And that's, I'm sure Mark will have mentioned, but that has really influenced our enrolment and employment gains. Our grades are going up, so our enrolments are going up, but we have teachers, a number of really high performing teachers that have joined us this year that came. One of the main reasons they came is because we have the coaching program at our school. So, they're really tangible, differences. I think we're prioritizing professional development.
Yeah, it's fascinating just listening to you, Raylene, go through that because of the fact that you've been there pre-coaching culture. And I think it's really interesting when you make the point, before that, it was a high performing school, and it's interesting that you pick up on that. And there was a lot of professional development already there. But you say, with the benefit of hindsight, and looking back on it now, you can see how essentially professional development is much more personalised now, and personalised to the extent that you're actually attracting other staff from other schools to come to you because there's that expectation and knowledge that professional development is going to be personalised, and it's not one size fits all, which is fantastic. So not only are you thinking about the coaching impact on the pupils, but you're thinking about that coaching impact on the staff on a very much one-to-one basis, which is absolutely fantastic. Raylene, you have an intriguing title to your role in school. Can you explain to us what exactly does a director of instructional coaching do in a typical day?
Okay, so there is no such thing as a typical day. I think, Richard, you and I have discussed, we both have very similar roles, very diverse role, which is probably the reason why I love it so much. The director part of it really only just comes, I think I do a lot of directing of traffic. So we have, 70 plus teachers accessing coaching at the moment and a team of 15 coaches, and actually matching coaches to coachees is a very big part of the role and surprisingly time consuming. I do have a teaching role, so I think it's really important to, it just helps me to keep my eye in. So I have a lovely group of Year 7 English boys. But one of the things that I think is most important about having a teaching role is in regard to that equity aspect of a coaching partnership. So the teachers that I'm coaching know that I teach a class, that I attend faculty meetings and planning meetings. I have to write reports. Yeah. I have to attend parent-teacher interviews, all of those things. It's really important. Also, I get to try out all the high-impact strategies on my little group of guinea pigs. my informal job description, and I came up with this with Mark when we were kind of creating the role and he was stepping away from the role. And it really is just to continue to ensure that the coaching program at Brighton Grammar thrives. And that's really what I keep, at my heart in everything that I'm doing. It has to continue to thrive. It's thriving at the moment, but maintaining that I think is important. So the majority of my days are spent in coaching conversations. So I'm a paid conversationalist, I tell my friends when they ask, what on earth do you do? A big part of the role is coaching development. So I think we prioritize this really well at Brighton Grammar School. Some of the schools that we also work with, find it a little bit intimidating, the amount of support we give our coaches, but we think that's why we're thriving. So our coaches attend a training session once a fortnight, even the coaches that have been coaching for 5 years. And they have a one-on-one conversation with me once a fortnight as well, just, you know, to support them. It's really me coaching them. And we've got two new coaches this year, so that's been a really nice aspect of the role. So I can't take all the credit for training them, because the whole coaching team really are taking that on. We have different senior coaches taking our new coaches out for coffee and just, you know, helping them troubleshoot, problem solve. But that's, you know, that's a real priority, and, you know, they're both really ready to take on a coaching load next term, which is really, really nice. And I have a significant coaching role of my own. So I have somewhere between 7 and 10 coaches that I work with. And then, you know, in amongst all of that, I present workshops, and I work with the Crowther Centre with Mark, supporting other schools, which is really something that we just love doing. So supporting other schools in establishing that coaching culture.
Fantastic. I mean, when I go down to the list of things I've noted there, Raylene, I mean, 70 plus teachers, I mean, that's a significant body of people. And like you say, matching coaches to teachers, I'm sure it takes a certain amount of time. I like the fact that you really do walk the walk, because you're teaching as well. And I do think that's important, you know, that you don't, you could very easily be elevated to a position where you coach and only coach. And I think sometimes you do lose touch, you know, with the classroom. So I really like that idea that, you know, you're keeping a hand in the classroom. And like you say, you get an opportunity to trial out some of the high impact strategies with your own year 7 class, which I think is great. I love that phrase, a paid conversationalist. I'm going to use that again. I think that's terrific. But also the fact that your guys are having a fortnightly, you know, coach training, and essentially they're getting supervision from you as well, on a regular basis throughout the year is hugely important. And that level, Mark talked a wee bit about that in the previous episode of outreach, is fantastic. And that I'm sure takes up an awful lot of time, and probably at times you're thinking it maybe takes up too much time, because everybody's going to want to know how you guys do it, and they're going to want to sort of get in on the game. So I can imagine that a paid conversation is fairly well occupied during a typical day. So thank you very much for that. Raylene, you have a natural curiosity about how to maximise literacy outcomes for boys. You've touched on that a wee bit already, which I know a lot of listeners will be interested in. And I'd like to separate this question, if I can, into three sections. So firstly, can you share with us how instructional coaching has affected change in the teaching of literacy at Brighton Grammar?
Sure. So whilst I'd love to give coaching the entire credit for the changes that have come about at Brighton Grammar in literacy, it works within a whole system. So literacy was a whole school priority for Brighton Grammar School, and it has been for the last 3 or 4 years. So the senior leaders in our school have made it very clear that the teaching of literacy is every teacher's responsibility in the school, and they've placed expectations on our teacher to improve the literacy. So with a whole school goal as big as that, and remember that I was the head of literacy up until the end of last year, we had to really implement a whole suite of structures and processes, which all then filtered through to where our coaches were working one-on-one with our teachers. So we developed a literacy playbook. We had a playbook of high impact strategies existing, but we developed a literacy playbook to support the literacy strategy. So that gave the teachers a really clear indication of what high impact literacy strategies looked like. And we ran very regular workshops. So the way our workshops work, and I'm sure Mark will have touched on this, is that the element of choice is very, very important. So we offer, you know, 3, 4, 5 different workshops, and very large secondary school, a very large primary school as well. And so one of those workshops that they could choose would be based on literacy, high impact literacy strategies. Mm-hmm. But what we found is that I would turn up to run these workshops thinking, you know, will I get one or two, because the headmaster's presenting on leadership in the room next door. But we had an overwhelmingly positive response. And so, you know, what was happening was that they were hearing this message that we need to improve literacy, and they agreed. You know, the year 12 teachers, the physics teacher was saying things like, you know, the boys know their content, but when it comes to writing short answers, mm-hmm. they're falling behind. So we had lots and lots of people coming to workshops. We trained all of our heads of faculty in high impact literacy strategies. And so it just kind of filtered down where I was noticing that the majority, well, not the majority, but a high proportion of the goals that coaches were working on were something to do with improving literacy.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you talk again about that element of choice, you know, which has obviously been an appeal for a lot of staff, you know, within the school and those coming to the school more recently. I think it's quite humorous, you know, when senior leadership, and particularly the principal of the school, is really emphasising the improvement in literacy, and then you've got the principal running a course next door to you. You know, it seems a bit strange that they're all coming to your class, really. And I suppose it's fairly automatic that if you push that as one of the goals, then you're going to get a big crowd of people coming to your class. And I think it's interesting too, you know, particularly considering your previous role, which you've, you know, temporarily stepped out of, you know, as head of literacy, you know, the importance of literacy throughout all of the different subjects. And I do think that's really important, that, you know, that message that it's every member of staff's responsibility to improve literacy, regardless of your subject specialty. And I suppose that's why there's been such a big uptick, because the physics teacher sees the importance of improved literacy, you know, within the boys in his or her class. And I like that idea, again, as you say, of a literacy playbook. So that focus has been really, really useful. Secondly, again, and I'm splitting this into three sections, how has the boys' experience of learning literacy in the classroom been impacted by instructional coaching?
I think, if you don't mind me sort of answering this anecdotally, mm-hmm. It was very clear. I think the change has been in their approach to literacy tasks, and that has come about because they are better armed with the strategies, and so they feel more confident to read or to write. I guess the other part that I would add to that is, I think it's quite clear to our boys that literacy has been a priority. So even coming down to little things that I introduced, like teachers putting up the book that they're currently reading in their window, just to sort of show that teachers love reading. The boys had that messaging, that the boys notice coaches coming into their classroom, for example, but they really just, you know, don't bat an eyelid these days, because it's always happening. But there is that level of transparency with our students, so that they would have read in the newsletter and they would have heard from the headmaster that literacy was something that their teachers are working on. So they see it as a priority. But anecdotally, the things that I've noticed, because I've been there a long time, are the collective groans that used to happen when you'd say, okay, boys, so we're going to do a writing task, and they'd go, ugh, you know, because there was just this culture of boys just not liking to write. And it's the same with reading. You know, parent-teacher interviews, inevitably every parent would say, oh, you know, little Johnny used to read all the time in primary school, but he got to about grade 5 and then it sort of slowly, you know, died off. And now he's in year 8 and he doesn't read at all. And that is starting to change as well. So that whole, like, they see their teachers and their school think that reading is a really important thing, and that they see that their teachers, who they love, also are readers. And we've explained to them why it's important, because boys need to know the why. But I just feel there's a change in attitude towards literacy tasks. And just mentioning that physics class, that was the best coaching experience for me last year, working with a year 12 group of physics boys and their teacher, because they knew that it was the writing part of their end of year 12 exam that they were going to lose marks on, you know, like, and all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, but they, writing was a real priority to them, and they were fascinated, like, how on earth can I improve my writing and get those, you know, extra grades? Not that it's all about grades. It is about communication and, you know, being a, you know, being a strong communicator. But, yeah, lovely, lovely experiences. But I do think they are armed with more skills, so they are confident. And I think that collective groan or that reluctance came from not knowing how to do it and not, not really being confident, whereas their confidence has changed. And don't get me wrong, we haven't kind of transformed, completely transformed literacy engagement, but there has definitely been a shift in it. And it's not just me that reports that. We all notice it.
It's interesting. I mean, I like that idea where you say, you know, the message was clear to the boys. You know, they understood what was happening, which I think is hugely important. And it's a lovely thought to think, you know, that the boys in class notice and recognise coaches coming in and out of the classroom. And that's a lovely position to get to as a school and in your coaching culture, where the students genuinely recognise and, you know, see when coaches come in and they know why they're there. And I think that is important for boys. And the idea that you talk about, you know, arming them with these strategies, you're giving them, you know, a reason to improve their literacy. And I think really, I mean, I've taught for 22 years over, well, up in the Northern Hemisphere, and I have three boys of my own. So it's an international problem, those collective groans, when it comes to writing and reading. We're all the same, but it's lovely to see the impact that coaching has had. And when we talk about impact, thirdly, just for the final part of this question, what has the impact then been on actual pupil outcomes in literacy?
So we I would love once again to take all of the credit, but coinciding with introducing coaching at Brighton Grammar School has been a significant steady improvement in outcomes at our school. In fact, last year we had our very best year 12 results ever, you know, over history, 140 year history, so the best results ever, which, you know, I truly believe was impacted by the literacy strategy, and it was evidenced in the improvement in results, you know, beyond the English results. So in the physics, in the music performance, the year 12 music teacher worked really hard on developing the writing, in her class. So that was a really, really good, indicator of how well we were going. But, the one that I'm most proud of is that, so, you know, I hate to dwell on standardized testing results, but, our year nine boys, last year, so the last lot of standardized testing, totally, challenged the trend in Australia. So the reported trend was that the growth in, writing ability between year seven and year nine in Australia was an area of concern. Mm-hmm. Whereas our year nines, like, outperformed our previous results by threefold. So it was really an area of significant growth for our year nines, and we were so proud of them. But it, you know, to me, that is something that, really shows, I guess, the change in the student confidence and attitude. You know, part of me wonders if in the past they get to standardized testings and think, oh, this isn't important, where maybe that shift in priority in their mind, also contributed to our growth.
Yeah, but it's lovely to see that shift in mindset from the pupil's perspective. And, you know, all of a sudden, even if it is a standardized test, and even as staff, we do our fair share of moaning and groaning about standardized tests, but to see the pupils themselves be that bit more motivated, feeling that they're now armed with the strategies to do better, then inevitably your outcomes are going to improve. And to think that you're having, you know, your highest outcomes in 140 years is just fantastic. And I suppose a real encouragement to the whole school community, staff, pupils themselves. But again, we have to be realistic. You know, that's an encouragement to parents. And when you're talking about enrollment going up, and I mean, we can't ignore the fact that when parents go to lift our prospectus, you know, an element of what they're looking for is outcomes. You know, what are the actual outcomes for the boys? But like you say, equally important to that is your development. Developing strong communicators, you know, and you mentioned that word confidence, and I think that will have been genuinely an outcome of the improvement in their literacy, you know, skills, is that that idea of confidence. Raylene, having just discussed the impact on pupil outcomes, specifically in literacy, what stage is pupil coaching at within Brighton Grammar? So students coaching other students, can you share with us how pupils have made effective use of coaching themselves?
Certainly, Richard. Well, we have several coaching programs running at Brighton that involve students. So one of them is that all of our secondary students meet for a coaching conversation with their house tutors on a termly basis. So we in effect shut down the typical program at school, and the boys come in and have one-on-one coaching sessions with their house tutors. But we also have a thriving student coaching program where our year 11 students coach our year 6 students. Mm-hmm. So, and it's just wonderful to observe. But, you know, obviously that involves a fair bit of training. So really, I think one of the great things about having so many different aspects to our coaching program is that pretty much everyone, our students and our teachers, have experience with coaching. So yeah. They're developing their listening and questioning skills and, mm-hmm. You know, and coaching is familiar. So when you talk about, when I spoke about the boys being comfortable with coaches coming into their room, it's really just a way of life at Brighton Grammar, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
I must say that most of my experience with the student coaching has been seeing what the year 11 students become as young men. So I've worked extensively with them in our positive masculinity program. So I work I have the pleasure of working alongside them in facilitating dialogic circles with young men and their, wow. you know, their mentors. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's just amazing to see, it's humbling really to see the natural way that these young men step into that coaching role. And, you know, they do it, they show me how it should be done. They're just amazing. So I think that is a really exciting growth area for our school, the student coaching.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic when I hear you talking about that, Raylene, particularly for the older boys who are coming towards the end of their time with you, developing those skills, as you say, you use the phrase young men. You know, because they're moving out, you know, out of Brighton Grammar at the end, essentially as young men. So to have them develop those skills at that age, they're going to bring that into tertiary education, or if it's out into the workplace, or wherever they go, which is a lovely way of seeing them right the way through from their younger years. Raylene, what advice would you give to other educators listening in who are right at the start of their coaching journey? Have you any helpful hints or tips?
Keep going. Keep doing it. Firstly, congratulations. You're embarking on an amazing journey.
Yeah.
It's such an honor to be a coach. And one of the things I must say is that we have a lot of teachers at our school who are expressing interest in becoming coaches as well. So I think that's, they see how much we thrive in the role. But advice, I think always learning is probably the umbrella comment I would make, because when you first start coaching, it's a very steep learning curve, but there's just so much to that you can work on to perfect your craft, and I don't think I'll ever get there. but what I always rely on is Jim Knight, you know, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but this is advice that I give all of my coaches. Jim says that as long as you're having a meaningful discussion with another teacher about their teaching and what's going on in their classroom, mm-hmm. and you're listening and you're interested and you're non-judgmental, then that teacher will be improving. To have that opportunity to talk. So you don't need to be perfect to start off with, but I think perhaps what I've learned in most recent years is being present and being interested, and not thinking about what your next question is going to be or how you're going to record this or what strategy, you know, you think that the coachee should be using, but being present and actually just allowing yourself to listen and be interested and connect is the first step for a new coach, I think, to work on. And you would know, Richard, when you allow a teacher to talk about their teaching, it doesn't matter who they are, their body language shows how much they love the opportunity to talk about what's going on in their classroom, because quite often it can be quite isolating. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's the most important thing, that I would suggest. It takes time. And so I've been coaching for 7 years and I'm still working on so much. I have so many goals. I'm very coachable. One of the things that, you know, it took me a very long time to cut down the amount of talking that I do because I'm a talker. But I think, you know, those kind of skills, you need to kind of approach one at a time. So I'll be coaching, regularly, daily, but just having that one goal that I'm working on, and it might be just cutting down on the amount of talking that I'm doing, will improve the way you're coaching. But you can't become a perfect coach instantly. It takes years. But I think you have impact from that very first discussion. Mm. So don't, and that, I guess that's the other thing is, the coaches that I work with often say, feedback to me, I just don't think I'm doing it right. I'm not doing it exactly the way it's supposed to be. And I throw back at them, there is no right. And I mean, there are wrong things. There are things that you shouldn't do. Right? Confidentiality is important, for example, but, you're not, you know, there's the structures and frameworks are there to help us become effective coaches, but it's more about way of being, I think. And it's more about, you know, being genuinely interested and genuinely partnering with a teacher and being yourself than worrying about getting it right and ticking the boxes. And I'm still not doing it right. I'm always a little bit apprehensive when I film myself coaching because I just think, oh, you know, you could have paraphrased. That was a perfect place for you to, you know, really clarify what's going on. Sorry, I guess the last thing is just embrace the learning. So the other thing my coaches always say to me is, oh, I feel a bit guilty because I think I learn more than the coachee is. Like, you know, I come out a bit more excited than they are. And I'm like, no, embrace that opportunity because the coaches become just the most skilled, professionals, because they learn through every coaching experience, and embrace that and just take it on. So I think being a learner, being a coach is wonderful, but you have to be a learner. The ultimate skill is to just learn and learn and learn and don't expect to be perfect from the start.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think a lot of really, really useful hints and tips in there, Aileen. But I think for me, you know, overarching all of them is that lovely phrase, for people who are starting out, congratulations, because you are embarking on a wonderful journey, which it is, and you can tell just listening to you talk about it, you know, that that's going to inspire people. Really, thank you so much for giving up some of your time to join me in conversation on our podcast today. It's been just great to do a double header at Brighton Grammar and hear both Mark's and your perspective on the impact a coaching culture can have on a school community. Can I wish you and your team continued success in the years to come, both in your own school and also as you continue to reach out and support other schools in their coaching journeys as well. For our listeners, what a jam-packed double episode with so many ideas about how to get started coaching in education. If you'd like to find out more about the courses available at GCI, have a look at our website, growthcoaching.com.au. And I hope you will join me on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.